Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I want to start with an article from AARP, the magazine. Up front, the A-list. Five surprising things about Kevin Baker. Number one, he was the baby of six Bacon children, the youngest by 8 years. So I was 100% an accident. My parents were loving and big on creativity. Write a song and play it, bang on a pot, do something. But when I left home, I was on my own. Two, he's had his ass kicked. When I got the call to be in Animal House, 1978, I thought I was off to the races. Then I went to the premiere, but wasn't given the VIP ticket. I was on the other side of the rope watching the cast get out of the limo and walk down the red carpet. If you want to stick it out, you've got to have thick skin, because you will get your ass kicked. Three, he still doesn't think he's made it. I really don't. But I would say there was a moment when I thought, I don't have to go back to waiting tables. That was probably around 1982 when Diner came out. Four, he's been married to Kira Sidgwick since 1988, but don't ask for their secret. I hesitate because it ends up being a quote that minimizes 36 years of marriage. And think about what the possible answers would be. Oh, she's my best friend. Get out of here. Marriage doesn't work. Look how many end in divorce. I'm not sure it's a good idea, honestly. It's like, yeah, we're still married, and that's that. Five, the whole 6 degrees thing has been a blessing and a curse. I say this with gratitude for coming as far as I have and being able to make a living in what I love to do. But with 6 degrees, there's an element of almost being more famous for being me than the work I've done. And this was as told to Chris Nashawaty. The Golden Globe-winning actor Kevin Bacon, 66, stars in the upcoming Amazon series The Bondsman, as well as Netflix Sirens, in which he appears opposite Julianne Moore. Now, we have a couple more sections on this article from AARP, the Bulletin, the cover story, Outsmart the System. We're going to look at interest rates. The Federal Reserve has reduced the benchmark interest rate. How can I take advantage of lower rates? The Fed cut the rate by a half point in September and another quarter point in November. Declining interest rates can bring welcome relief for people aiming to consolidate debts. Refinance a mortgage or apply for a loan. But there's a flip side. Savers will earn less on safe, interest-bearing investments, such as certificates of deposit and money market accounts. Outsmart the system. Lock in top savings rates. If you have cash on hand, don't wait to put it in a CD, says Mark Hamrick, a senior economic analyst at Bankrate. The average yield on a 12-month CD was at 1.75% late last year, but online banks typically pay more. Consider the yield in early November on a 12-month CD offered by the online bank Marcus by Goldman Sachs, 4.2%. I can't stress enough. Shop around, says Jacob Channel, senior economist for LendingTree. Weigh mortgage options. If you have been waiting to buy a home, or if you're helping a child with their first purchase, this is a better time to jump in than a year ago. But it could still pay to wait a little longer. The average 30-year mortgage rate has dropped from a peak of 7.8% late last year to 6.9% as of November of last year, and it's likely to fall further. It won't drop to near the 3% we saw during the pandemic, but will probably go to the mid-5% range. Tackle credit card debts. It typically takes more than one Fed rate cut for credit card interest rates to fall noticeably. The average remains at nearly 25% compared to 16.28% in 2020. The best advice is to pay off your balance regularly. This can boost your credit score and enable you to take advantage of better deals when they come. Used car sales. New cars have gotten expensive. How can I get a deal on a used car? More than 36 million used cars were projected to change hands in the U.S. in 2024. While the average cost of a new car is approaching $50,000, the average list price for a used car is about half of that, according to Cox Automotive. Outsmart the system. Be patient. Every day in the U.S., on average, there are 99,000 used cars available. Sean Tucker, lead editor for Kelley Blue Book, says that dealers will try to convince you that the car you're considering is the only one available. But the reality is another one will come along. So it pays to wait for a price you like. All of your leverage comes in your ability to walk away. Be flexible. Hondas and Toyotas are popular in the used car market, and that means you may pay more for those than for similar models from other manufacturers. Ronald Montoya, senior consumer advice editor for Edmunds, notes that Fords or Hyundai may cost less, and you'll have more cars from which to choose. Prioritize low mileage. Many buyers want a late model vehicle, meaning it is relatively new, but often those cars are on the market because the owner has racked up miles. Meanwhile, you can find deals by looking for older cars with lower mileage. That means it hasn't been driven as much, Montoya says. You won't need some expensive repairs that might come at a higher mileage part. Don't fret a small dent. While everyone wants a beautiful car, scratches and dents may be an advantage. Tucker points out that in a private party sale especially, those scars can give you a negotiating edge. AARP resources. Find expert advice on new and used car buying, including information on models, safety features, and pricing at aarp.org/auto/car-buying. And finally, risky market. This past year has been seen volatility in the stock market. How can I avoid the stress of the ups and downs? As of early November, the S&P 500 was up by more than 20% this year, but it's been a wild ride. In August, the CBOE Volatility Index, VIX, a measure of how frequently and widely stock prices swing, hit its highest level since the stock market collapse of March 2020, mainly because of concerns about the economy and geopolitical issues. If you focus on things you can control instead of things you can't, you can minimize your stress level, says Gretchen Holstein, a senior advisor at Littman Gregory Wealth Management. Outsmart the system. Hedge your bets. Diversify across small, medium, and large stocks and different sectors. This way, when one stock or sector goes down, another may go up, potentially evening out portfolio performance. Trying to pick the one stock or sector you think will win and over-allocating to it just isn't prudent. It's proven to be a loser's game, said David Johnson, manager partner at Amswell Ridge Wealth Management in Flemington, New Jersey. And think of your stocks as 3 to 5 year investments at a minimum. This will help you resist checking in on their short-term fluctuations. Rebalance your portfolio. Every few months, check your investment mix. A portfolio's weightings of stocks, bonds, and other investments shift and over time will skew toward the better performing assets classes. That sounds good, but may not prepare you for downturns. You may have more risk than you intend. Johnson says, be sure to take chips off the table by rebalancing if that's the case. And tune out the daily market chatter. Around the clock market news fuels anxiety, Johnson says. Don't be concerned about daily ups and downs. It can drive you nuts. Turn off the TV and live your life. I promise you will feel better. Now, I want to get back to an article in Psychology Now, Take Control of Your Mind for a Happier, Healthy Life. We're up to the point where we were talking about understanding dissociative disorders, and we're at the part entitled Get a Diagnosis. A family doctor or GP is the first port of call if you are worried that you have the symptoms of a dissociative disorder. It can be hard to explain how you are feeling, so it's worth writing down any episodes you can remember or any thoughts you are struggling with. Accounts of many episodes and occurrences can help build a picture for the doctor to help diagnose the condition. First, a doctor will need to rule out any other causes for the symptoms. Certain drugs or medications, for example, can cause dissociative, as can alcohol misuse. There could even be a physical cause for the feelings of dissociation, such as a head injury or another condition, such as anxiety. If there is no clear cause for these symptoms, then a full mental health assessment is likely to be conducted, ideally via a psychotherapist or psychiatrist with a background in dissociative disorders. This assessment requires honesty to get a reliable diagnosis. It may be that the symptoms are more likely to be linked to another mental health condition, and the way the episodes impact on your everyday life will be taken into consideration too. It can still be difficult to get diagnosed with a dissociative disorder, partly due to an overlap in symptoms with more common mental health conditions, partly due to a lack of understanding of these conditions, and partly due to the difficulty in describing the symptoms. Not everybody finds a specific diagnosis helpful, particularly if the symptoms are short-lived, infrequent, or don't have a huge impact on your day-to-day life. In these cases, self-help and online resources can be useful, and you can still ask for help with your symptoms, even without a formal diagnosis. It might be that you come across dissociative disorders as a result of your own research and readings, trying to make sense of the way you feel and what you're experiencing. What causes these disorders? Dissociative disorders often come about due to a specific trauma, though not everyone who experiences a difficult or traumatic event will experience dissociation. These disorders are more likely in those who experience some form of abuse or neglect, particularly at a young age or over a long period of time. The younger a person is when they experience trauma, the more likely dissociation is, as the young mind cannot cope with processing what is happening to them. More extreme cases of dissociation are often triggered by childhood experiences like physical, sexual, or emotional abuse or severe neglect. When dissociation is the only way that that child can remove themselves from a situation, dissociation is also more likely to occur if a child doesn't have a source of comfort or support in their life during a difficult time, or if the neglect or abuse is caused by someone they are emotionally attached to. It also means that, as an adult, that person doesn't have any other mechanisms to cope with stress and will dissociate during difficult periods. Other cases and risk factors are one-off incidents of extreme trauma as adults that can't be processed in any other way. It's normal to dissociate during the initial traumatic event as a way of coping and to protect the mind. The problem occurs when dissociation continues for a long time afterwards, and it can become a coping mechanism for everyday stresses too. When linked to a particularly traumatic event, your mind may block out certain memories. However, something can trigger these memories and cause flashbacks, which can be very difficult to cope with, especially if the memory has been repressed for a long time. It is worth noting that depersonalization and derealization are not always caused by a specific trauma or event, and can happen alongside other mental health conditions that put body in a state of stress. No one is really sure why we experience dissociation when released or traumatized. In difficult situations, the mind goes into fight or flight mode, and this is relatively well understood. Dissociation might occur when neither of these options are available, when you can't escape or fight a situation, as a way of protecting you from what you're experiencing. Dissociation may stop us from forming solid memories or understanding where we are or what is happening, changing the way we think and feel until the real or perceived trauma has passed. This would explain periods of amnesia or sensations of detachment and unreality. Links to other conditions. Dissociative disorders can appear on their own, or they can appear alongside other mental health conditions. This is why it can be hard to define a dissociative disorder, and therefore it's not uncommon to get a diagnosis of a different condition entirely. When dissociation is triggered by a specific traumatic event, a person may also suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. This causes a person to relive a traumatic event and suffer from flashbacks. PTSD is thought to affect 1 in 3 people who experience trauma and can be more likely if the trauma is experienced in childhood and over a sustained period of time. Depersonalization or derealization can be experienced by people who also suffer from anxiety and panic attacks. The panic attacks can convince the mind that is undergoing a traumatic event, and the mind reacts to the perceived threat just as it would a real one. Long-term anxiety can build up and create a lot of stress in the body, which can trigger dissociation to escape the situation. Depression, phobias, insomnia, and obsessive-compulsive disorder, OCD, can also create situations where the mind is overstressed and triggers a dissociation episode. If a person suffers from a dissociative disorder for a long period of time, this can also lead to thoughts of self-harm or suicidal tendencies as they struggle to connect with themselves or the world around them. Now, going back to AARP, the magazine, let's look at another survivor of a shooting attack. This is Norma Valenzuela, 61, a housekeeper worker, El Paso, Texas, date of shooting August 3rd, 2019. Valenzuela and her adult daughter had been in Walmart for no more than 10 minutes when the commotion began. She was knocked to the ground as screaming people ran past her, away from a gunman shooting. Her daughter pulled her to her feet, and the two of them began running too. Just behind them, a young woman was shot in the leg. Outside, it was 90 degrees, and Valenzuela and her daughter hid inside a shipping container that neared a deadly level of heat. Police apprehended the gunman, who had killed 23 people and injured 22. Norma has never been back to that Walmart. It was 2 years before she would go back to any Walmart. Even when she does go, she feels jumpy, she says. I suddenly start observing people. If they have a backpack, if they put their hands in their pants. Some trips to big box stores are inevitable. She now has a routine to help her stay calm when she shops. I look for where I'll hide, she says. Once I have a place to hide, I can relax. Years ago, she had moved her family to El Paso from Juarez, Mexico, then considered the most violent city in the world due to drug cartels. I came here for shelter, and then this happened, she said. Although she was physically uninjured, moving forward with her life has taken work. The early days were terrible, she says. A lot of anguish, a lot of crying, fear, staying inside. She wouldn't stop ruminating, analyzing, realizing how close she and her daughter had come to disaster, how many others were not as lucky. Anti-anxiety medication and talk therapy have helped, she says, but the most valuable tool she has found is meditation. guided more by YouTube than by books, she says, because she's found it hard to concentrate on reading since the shooting. 3 or 4 times a week, when Valenzuela finds herself stuck in a cycle of negative thoughts, she turns to Andrea at Escuela de Armory y Superacción Personal, the School of Love and Self-Improvement, a YouTube channel that has nearly 1.8 million subscribers. Meditation is just so beautiful that I don't know how to explain it, she says. She loves music, especially boleros, but an invitation to a concert can send her into a spiral of self-doubt. She'll agree to go, then start questioning herself as soon as she hangs up the phone. I think I just don't want to go, but how do I tell them? This back and forth is part of being a survivor, she says. Since the shooting, she finds more fear in everyday situations, but also more beauty in everyday objects. She worries more, yet says she's also more attuned to the needs of others. Both scared and grateful, she says she will not give up. Now on to Ed Sanders, 65, retired health claims specialist, Colorado Springs, Colorado. The date of the shooting, November 19th and 20th, 2022. It was 4 minutes to midnight, and Sanders had just handed his credit card to the bartender at Club Q, a local gay bar, when the first bullet hit his back. Turning, he saw a gunman firing into the crowd. For a moment, muzzle flashes were all that distinguished the blast from the pounding music. Then a bullet hit his right thigh, and he fell to the floor next to a stranger who had also been shot. He pressed a napkin to the stranger's wound and listened as her breathing turned ragged and then stopped. 3 patrons rushed the shooter and restrained him until the police arrived. 5 people died in the attack, and 19 were injured. After the shooting, after the tourniquet and ambulance ride, after the skin graft, the 18-day hospital stay, and the 4 months of daily home nurse visits for wound dressing changes, Ed Sanders bought a new wardrobe. He got an ombre suit jacket of blue to silver sequins, a purple crushed velvet jacket embroidered with a floral and paisley motif, and a black jacket covered in a silver scroll work to defy the bigots, he explains. I'm going to be more visible than ever. I'm going to speak out more, he says. Representing the United Court of the Pikes Peak Empire, the local chapter of one of the largest and oldest LGBTQ+ organizations in the world, he has traveled to Omaha, San Antonio, St. Louis, and elsewhere, talking about that night at the club. One thing he does less of, wearing a bathing suit in public. It's uncomfortable to have to explain the chunk of missing tissue in his thigh. It looks kind of like an ice cream scoop has been taken out of my leg, he says. Surgeons tried to repair the damage, but less than 40% of the skin graft took. The pain of that procedure was almost as bad as getting shot, Sanders said, so he's not eager to try again. He gets around fine, though his pre-existing limp has become more pronounced. The night of the shooting, he was carrying a cane topped with a raven, and it blocked one of the bullets intended for him. Sanders keeps the cane on a hook behind his front door, the raw wood visible where the bullet splintered it. The cane serves as a reminder that as bad as his injuries were, they could have been worse. Sanders knows a long life is not guaranteed, he said, but I'm going to make the most of the time that I have. Now, from Upfront Eat, this is also AARP, the magazine, Beyond the Button, 6 mushrooms every cook should know. Chef William Aikens of the Bray Experience in New Jersey offers tips on cooking with them. Maitake, hen of the woods. Taste is woody, savory, spicy. It's best for risottos and stuffed mushrooms. Then we have the portobello. It's earthy, meaty, and has a meaty feel. It's best for grilling in places of a burger patty. Shiitake mushrooms. It tastes smoky, flavor, chewy texture. Best for stir fries and ramen soups. Enoki. The taste is crisp and delicate, slightly fruity flavor. Best for add to vegetable spring rolls for tender texture. oyster mushrooms, mild sweetness, smooth, buttery texture, best for breaded and pan-fried for poor boy sandwiches. And finally, Crimini Baby Bellas. Taste is earthy and tender, best for raw salads. Now we know. And other, also under Upfront, but Go, food culture on aisle 2. Grocery store tourism gives you a serving of local flavor. There's a trend on TikTok where young people post videos at supermarkets in the U.S. and around the world marveling at the frozen pizzas in Wisconsin or the flavored potato chips in Asia. They aren't searching out specialty shops, but rather hitting major retail food stores. Yep, Gen Z has figured out what the old folks have known for decades. A trip to a grocery store is a fabulous way to get a feel for the local culture, says avid traveler Melanie Kurinoskosis, 51, of San Diego. It's interesting to see how people live, what flavors or experiences they have. Great Britain has Swizzles, Squashies, Candy, Jammy Dodgers Cookies, Jaffa Cakes with chocolate and fruit flavors. Singapore has Kaya, a creamy jam made with coconut milk, eggs and sugar, and flavored with pandan leaf. In Japan, there's various flavors of Kit Kat candy bars, including cough drop, rum raisin, melon with mascarpone, sake, wasabi, matcha, strawberry, and melty caramel, and I've had some of those. Regional U.S. sodas include New Hampshire's Squamscott Old Fashioned Maple Cream Soda, New York's Sioux City's Sarsaparilla, and Seattle's Jones Green Apple Soda. In Thailand, there are Oreo-flavored Coca-Cola and Coca-Cola-flavored Oreos. In Norway, you can get Mills Caviar Smoked Cod Roe Paste that comes in a squeeze tube. In South Africa, Woolworth's Fruit and Nut Rusks like tiny granola bars. What's that odor? When your car smells like that, do this. Rotten eggs. Get the catalytic converter checked. Burning oil. Checked for low oil or leaks. Maple syrup. Check the coolant level. Moldy odor. Get air conditioning checked. Burning plastic. Stop immediately. Get the car towed to a mechanic for an electrical check. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. To be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.